From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is 91.3 KUAF, your spot on the radio dial for NPR News and public radio programs since 1985. And this is Ozarks at Large for Monday, August 14th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on today's show, a new series will bring songwriters closer to listeners. And Walmart and vendor relationships are examined by Michael Tilley as part of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. First up on this Monday, around this time last year, a group of University of Arkansas students with their chapter, the American Society of Landscape Architects, created a mini park in one parking space in front of the UARC Bowl on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. The mini park, or parklet, was put up for one day to celebrate a national event called Parking Day. That day encourages putting up temporary mini parks. A local property management company that owns the UARC building liked the idea so much, they decided to expand the concept for an entire year. Randy Werner with Old Buildings LLC is working on the project with the students and the city. And he spoke with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek about how the parklet is part of the greater tactical urbanism trend, where local citizens install temporary infrastructure to see whether it could lead to something more permanent.
So why did you love the student project so much? What about it kind of made you pursue this?
You know, I think I just loved everything about it. I mean, from a level of like design and like architecture, I mean, we love that. I mean, this is Fayetteville and it's something unique and fun, but it's also just the interaction you saw people have with it. And it's just, I mean, there's just such great energy with it. It just kind of seemed like it's a no-brainer kind of thing. And you know, for us, we do a lot of different projects, and so anytime we get a chance to do something kind of fun, we love those opportunities, and we're fortunate to be, you know, where we are and to live where we are. And so anytime we can bring something, you know, some kind of new element or something kind of fun back into our environment, it's, I think, you know, it's something that we definitely want to do. So it was just an opportunity, and in that opportunity you could tell the city and so many people were behind wanting that and encouraging it and wanting somebody to go do that. And so I think everything about it, you know, made me want to do it.
Can you describe for me exactly where it's going to be?
So there's a parallel spot right in front of Blackboard Eatery and Grocery right there. Mm-hmm. And so it is that spot. It's like 7343. I don't know. There's a number, you know. But it's that parallel space right there.
So. Okay. So you're going to take up just the space, right?
Just that one parking space, yeah. Okay. So that's also a part of the design and constraints of, like, how do you do that? Because there are, you know, there's a road there. There's sidewalk. There are other parallel spaces that all need to be used and, you know, not in encroached. So, I mean, you have to kind of work your design around that.
So can you describe a little bit for me what it's going to look like?
It's the idea, I mean, it'll have like a tube metal framing here and there that you'll see. There'll be some benches, there'll be some stand-up tabletop areas, and it'll be, you know, a lot of wood wrapping, you know, elements that you see pretty consistently, like a treated 1x4, you know, type of trim out and kind of, I guess, just kind of folding wood and metal, essentially, kind of idea. And then there's also a planter bed that'll be incorporated in and that we're going to try to take into the landscaping bed right next to the parklet and kind of pull in some low impact planting, you know, styles through there. So we've talked about even adjusting the plantings kind of as the seasons change and do some different things with it. So it'll, I think a lot of that will kind of, you know, be adaptive as we go along. The original design, we had a shade canopy, but we were concerned that the canopies might block visibility of the commercial spaces right there, and that was some of their concern. So we pulled that back, but we thought we can bring in like umbrellas and shades as needed. And Leisha at Blackboard, and between Leisha and then in our office, and we're just right across the street, we're right here too, we'll kind of maintain all of that, and we can, you know, adjust as things are going. We've talked about doing some nice rope lighting and have it lit at night. There are some constraints. We'll probably have things on timer. The PD want us to have it shut down during certain times of the night to try to, I mean, one of the, you know, parts of the concerns are, you know, it's an entertainment district. There's people that probably drink and drive and that shouldn't, obviously, but there are times where there are more, incidents of you know, of drinking and driving or potential impaired drivers and safety concerns. So we worked with the PD to try to figure out what are some practices we can put in place to try to alleviate some of those concerns and, you know, be conscious of people that are going to be in that space is their safety. And, you know, that's everything from some of the structure pieces that we're going to place, so like barricades and barriers, to some visibility components that will happen as well. And then how to kind of maybe like shut it down and try to keep people out of it during certain times.
So when the students did the parklet for a day, was it in that spot also?
Yeah, it was in that exact spot. Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah.
So, you know, so their project was obviously just a day. But then there's this whole trend of tactical urbanism where you sort mm-hmm. of install yeah. these temporary things to see if they'll work on a permanent basis.
Right, yeah.
So is this sort of in that same vein?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it's that almost exactly, maybe a little more permanent than some of the urban tacticalism might be, but yeah, I mean, I think it's absolutely to that level. We had started down the road and kind of, you know, it took us about a year going through all the channels to do it, and in that time, they really started to push this opportunity for urban tacticalism, which the intent of that is to really speed up that process, which is nice, because it can be daunting trying to do a project, and you know, it takes a year to try to even get it, you know, approved to do it, and you don't even know if you're going to get it approved. So the city really opening up that avenue for the urban tacticalism is, I mean, I think it's just wonderful because it keeps people encouraged and keeps them engaged with this stuff and pushing it through. So I mean, it is, and I would hope to see you know, the urban tacticalism really kind of keep growing and just see more of these kind of projects pop up. And if it's not permanent, I mean, and if there's a safety concern, if it just frustrates too many people or whatever it might be, it can easily come out. And that's actually one of the interesting challenges in terms of this that we were presented with from the city is figuring out how to do it almost like it's flat packed, where you could you take it down and relocate it to another space. And so we're even trying to take the conceptual drawings and the concept of it and figure out how do you build it so that you can easily do that. And so those are like the barricades that we've chosen that can be water filled, so you can easily place them, you know, where you need to fill them, drain them, you know, and the city's actually using similar barricades for Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. They're starting to invest in some different pieces like that. So there's lots of different materials you can choose that can make it work.
So what's sort of the end goal for this, you know, if it's up for a year? What comes after that?
Well, we have a lot of end goals. I joke with several people, like one end goal is I want to just have people sitting there having a beer, hanging out, you know, like that's my end goal. Not one of my end goals. No, but I think the, you know, one of the main things is just sort of installing and implementing something and kind of seeing how people utilize it and hoping if people see value in it and, you know, utilize it in effective ways, then, you know, this expanding. And, you know, I like to look across the street and see another one, you know, in front of a business. I joked that, you know, parking day, we need to like rent out all of those spaces and do, you know, up that whole section of the street, just have, you know, spots all the way up. Just take, you know, I don't know, like 10, 15 spaces and, you know, have a huge parking day event, you know, and I mean, it's just one day. I mean, you know, there's a lot of parking available, but so, I mean, I guess those are the things that I like to see, just people utilize it and it maybe encourages somebody to do more. And it opens up that door in the city and we're going to start to see that the door is pretty much open with the city. And so let's just expand it from here and let's have, you know, more interaction with it and more spaces for people to interact on Dixon Street.
That was Randy Werner of Old Buildings LLC speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. Werner says the construction materials for the parklet have been ordered and installation should start in the next 2 to 4 weeks. The parklet will also include bike racks and a mural painted by a local artist. Parklets have become popular in cities across the country. San Francisco has even come out with a guide on how to develop many parks to keep spreading the idea.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Cherishing Children Dinner and Awards Presentation is September 21st at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. Supporters, guests, and those working with abuse victims are invited. This evening will include an inspiring message from guest speaker Lucille O'Neill, mother of Shaquille O'Neill. Tickets and information at cacbentonco.com or 621-0385.
This is Ozarks at Large. Singer-songwriters from around the country will perform next weekend during the Fayetteville Roots Festival. If you're looking for some acoustic music this weekend, you may be interested in a new songwriter concert series in Tulsa. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
The Woody Guthrie Center launched a monthly concert series in July. In a small concert hall located within the museum, about 35 people gathered to listen to three local musicians and one performer from New Mexico named Max Gomez.
So I probably don't know everybody here. My name's Max.
Hey, Max.
Kind of like we're breaking bread together here.
Max was in town to perform at the Woody Guthrie Folk Festival in nearby Okemah. In this more intimate space, he was able to share stories about his music and interact with the audience. When describing a song inspired by an antique store in Heber Springs, Arkansas, he was able to stop and chat with a couple in the audience who just happened to hail from that small town.
Well, you probably know the shop then. It's down on Main Street across from the courthouse. Somewhere in time, a place in time.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry Wofford, Education and Public Programs Manager at the Woody Guthrie Center, says this give and take between performer and audience member is one of the goals of the new acoustic concert series.
It is a really great chance to see and experience them really close up and really kind of get a back and forth even with the musician as well. They'll talk to us, we talk to them. It's a really intimate setting that's not really found a lot of places. You can go to a bar and hear music, but it can be loud. This is strictly meant to hear the music and take in the music and appreciate what these artists have done with their craft.
Unplugged performances are scheduled to take place every third Saturday of the month in the Woody Guthrie Center Theater. Wofford says the 60-person venue has a living room feel and was built for the purpose of showcasing acoustic music.
Woody Guthrie was a very prolific songwriter, more than 3,000 songs in his career. So to have people who are coming here to carry on that tradition of songwriting, and not only the tradition of songwriting, but the tradition of playing unfiltered, directly to your audience. So you get the song directly from the songwriter. There's nothing in between. That's a really deep tradition in folk music that goes back to where Woody started. He didn't really use a lot of amplification a lot of his performances. So to have that here as well, it just fits really nicely to our mission and bringing people in to hear these different songwriters in the way that is a unique thing for Tulsa, I think, especially.
Wofford says this intimate series will give concert goers a deeper connection to musicians and their songs.
People who appreciate the stories that these songwriters are telling, the passion through which they tell them, hearing that and experiencing that beyond just a noisy bar or beyond a CD or off the internet, you get just a much richer, deeper experience and connection to these songs. So that when you do see them the next time they're in Fayetteville or you do listen to them on the internet the next time, you'll be able to have that experience of, oh, I know where this song came from, and I got to hear this person play it almost directly to me in Tulsa.
The Woody Guthrie Center's monthly Songwriters Evening series continues Saturday with Kaylin Faye Barnowski, Jared Tyler, and John Calvin Abney. Tickets for this all-ages show are $18 in advance, $20 at the door, and $15 for members. More information is available at woodyguthriecenter.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Rocked by the insurance claims, spawned from the smoke and the flames. From the broken oil light that caught a spark in the night and set fire to the empty store.
If you can't make it to Tulsa this weekend, Kaylin Fay will be performing September 9th at the Arts Center of the Ozarks in Springdale as part of the ACO's Main Street Music Night series. You can find out more about that show at acozarks.org. And later on this edition of Ozarks, an Arkansas singer who gained fame for music, TV, and films beginning more than 70 years ago, but now is forgotten by many.
Remember me when the candle lights are gleaming. Remember me at the close of a long, long day.
Remembering the man who made Remember Me famous, Mina's own T. Texas Tyler. That's later on today's Ozarks at Large.
Next time on 1A, how can you fight back against hate groups? The violent fringe we saw in Charlottesville is nothing new, but after this weekend's attack, many people want ideas for responding to extremists. How can we contain these threats and still preserve everyone's First Amendment rights? Next time on 1A.
Tomorrow morning from 9 to 11 on 91.3. We continue to have a mild August with temperatures this week slightly below the average for the second week of this month. Tonight, a 50% chance of more showers or thunderstorms, lows from 69 to 72 throughout the region. 40% chance of rain tomorrow, especially during the morning, and that too throughout the listening area. Highs from the mid-80s tomorrow in northwest Arkansas to about 91 in downtown Fort Smith. Normally, highs this week would be near 90 in northwest Arkansas, mid-90s for the Arkansas River Valley, but the latest forecast from the National Weather Service indicates highs not getting out of the 80s in northwest Arkansas through Sunday and not exceeding 91 or 92 for the Arkansas.
The 2017 Fayetteville Roots Festival is August 23rd through the 27th. This festival of roots music, local food, and Ozark culture will feature a variety of free and ticketed community events in both Fayetteville and Bentonville. TheRootsFest.org for event schedule and more information. The 7th annual Winslow Half Marathon and 5K Run is September 16th, starting at 8 a.m. This run through the Boston Mountains of Northwest Arkansas will benefit a variety of nonprofits in Winslow, including the library, town museum, and meals program. Registration and information at winslowrun.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. In just a few minutes on the program, a Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. Because of scheduling challenges and early deadlines last week, we didn't have the report on last Thursday, but we will have a report in about 5 minutes. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton says white supremacists are contemptible little men who do not speak for the vast majority of Americans. The senator, traveling in the Balkans, issued the statement yesterday morning after violence in Virginia this weekend surrounding a rally organized by self-described white nationalists. Senator Cotton says their views betray their own ignorance of what makes the country special, a recognition of natural rights for everybody. Before the senator left the country on an official congressional trip, he also defended his push for immigration reform during a conversation with Talk Business and Politics. The reforming American immigration for a strong economy would dramatically alter the legal immigration process. Senator Cotton says the bill, if passed as is, would establish a priority list of abilities to allow people to legally immigrate.
So today there's a lot of arbitrary caps and different set-asides and quotas for this industry or that industry or so forth. We would just do away with all of that. And we'd say, let's look at the evidence that suggests what is going to make an immigrant a success story. Help them find a job that pays a good wage and not go on welfare, support their family, pay taxes, and so forth.
The legislation has been criticized by many immigration advocates and some business advocates because they say it's far too restrictive. Sebastian and Washington counties will receive up to $1.6 million each from the state to help establish crisis stabilization units that will provide assessment and treatment services for people with behavioral health conditions. The money will be supplied from the governor's discretionary rainy day fund. The 16-bed facilities will also be created in Pulaski and Craighead counties. The CSUs were created through legislation passed earlier this year and signed into law by Governor Asa Hutchinson in March. The hope is that the CSUs can help ease the strain on local jails and improve outcomes for people with behavioral health conditions. University of Arkansas classes start a week from today, and beginning September 1st, concealed guns would be theoretically allowed to be brought onto campus under a new state law. Act 562, sponsored by Arkansas Republican Representative Charlie Collins of Fayetteville, was signed into law late last March by the governor. It allows certain faculty, staff, and students to carry weapons on public college and university campuses across the state. The Arkansas State Police are in the process of formulating a training and permit infrastructure to implement enhanced certification training. Concealed weapons may be carried on campus only if a person is over 21, has an Arkansas concealed handgun permit, and has completed additional training of up to 8 hours, as specified by the Arkansas State Police, to receive the enhanced concealed carry permit. According to a letter issued late last week by University of Arkansas Chancellor Joseph Steinmetz, the campus community will be updated. In the interim, he says, the U of A has posted a new online resource at safety.uark.edu with detailed information for students, faculty, staff, and visitors, as well as links to the law themselves and the UA system. In Arkansas, a statewide study is underway to assess the mental health consequences of being a first responder. National studies have reported more than 80% of first responders have witnessed trauma on the job, and about 34% have been diagnosed with PTSD or depression. Dr. Sarah Jones with UAMS is conducting the Arkansas study, which surveys firefighters and paramedics and runs through the end of the year. She says so far she's had over 200 people participate in an anonymous survey and 21 in an individual interview with a researcher.
I did not know what to expect for the interviews. I really didn't. I thought a few people might want to talk, but a lot of people want to talk. I've even gotten a few retirees in the last couple of weeks that have called me and want to talk about it. So that's important because, of course, they've been through it, retired now, and they want to see things change.
And so far, her study has shown that 1 in 4 first responders either have moderate to severe anxiety disorder, PTSD, or are at high risk for suicide. Jones is seeking further funding to keep going with the study and hopes the data can shed light on what interventions are needed. A financial website lists Arkansas among the worst states in the nation to have a baby. WalletHub's 2017 Best and Worst States to Have a Baby report places Arkansas as the 10th worst state for mothers giving birth and their newborns. The study considers several factors from hospital delivery charges to the rate of low birth weight. Arkansas ranks 45th in the country in infant mortality rate and 43rd in low birth weight. The state does score better than average in hospital charges and for parental leave policies. Mississippi was ranked last overall, Vermont first. Oklahoma was ranked 2 spots better than Arkansas, and Missouri was ranked 30th overall. Governor Asa Hutchinson is announcing changes for the state's Division of Youth Services. This morning, he called for a security audit of all juvenile facilities, as well as an independent review of the division. He also announced the private sector will take over in July 2018.
We will move to a bid solicitation for a private sector operator. This bid solicitation will most likely go out this December with the announcement of the winner or multiple winners in March of next year.
The governor also says the state is investigating if there are ways to maximize Medicaid funds in conjunction with youth services. He made the announcement just before noon today. And supporters of a program designed to connect low-income Arkansans with education opportunities through community colleges in the state say the latest results indicate the Arkansas Career Pathways program is working. The project released a report showing a 179% return on investment for the program that began in 2005. The study, conducted by a firm in New York City, shows participants' wages increased after they took part in the program, and there was increased tax revenue for the state. The report also indicates the average Arkansan in the program is a single mother in her early 30s.
The Show Me State is showing some money to Benton County. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. I'm Paul Gatling. A land development and a coffee company are coming to Bentonville, both tracing their roots to Missouri. Those are two of our top stories this week. A group of investors from the Springfield area is behind a new apartment complex along I Street in southwest Bentonville, next to the Bentonville Community Center. It's got a price tag of about $25 million, has 238 units, and is expected to be finished by late 2018. Closer to the city center, a gourmet coffee business, also from Springfield, is in the process of relocating its headquarters and roastery to downtown Bentonville. the owners of Heroes Coffee Company are renovating a former Easy Mart gas station at the corner of 8th and A Streets, just a few blocks east of the Walmart home office. The business supplies coffee on a wholesale and retail basis. The roastery should be operational in less than a week, and the cafe side should be open for retail customers before the end of August. You'll find much more on both of those stories on our website at nwabusinessjournal.com. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. On August 1st, a new Walmart program went into effect that its suppliers are all keenly aware of. It's called On Time and In Full, or just OTIF for short. And the OTIF directive involves much more stringent delivery guidelines for Walmart vendors and their products. Executive Editor Michael Tilley sat down with Colby Beeland recently to talk about OTIF and some of the new challenges suppliers are now facing. Beeland is Vice President of Sales and Marketing for logistics provider CaseStack of Fayetteville, and he offered his perspective on what the new program will mean for the Walmart supplier community.
Since 2010, Walmart has operated under what they called supply chain reliability, which was a four-day delivery window delivered within a 90% fill rate and on time to Walmart. But a year ago, February, Walmart announced that they were looking to adjust the MABD windows and go to a new program called On Time In Full. And that was a year and a half ago, and the scuttlebutt was, man, they're not going to be able to do this. They can't execute this. Then Walmart reiterated it this year at the Growth Summit that OTIF was real and that it was coming. So the baseline for OTIF for a supplier was established in January. And then starting in August, Walmart is going to take that baseline, expect a 10% improvement over what the baseline was from January, with a minimum of 33% for an LTL supplier, less than truckload supplier, and a minimum of 75% for a full truckload supplier. So Walmart is now measuring the supplier based upon the OTIF of either a one-day or two-day window, depending upon the category that they're in. So food and consumables is subject to a one-day delivery window at 95%.
For obvious reasons.
Basically, general merchandise is a two-day window at 95%. So if a supplier fails to comply with the baseline plus 10% or the minimum thresholds, then whatever cases fall outside of that window are going to be subject to a 3% penalty starting this month.
For 3% based on the value of the product.
Right.
So which could be, I mean, if you're selling electronics, that could be a hefty fine, couldn't it?
Electronics, pharmaceuticals, things of that nature.
Well, sure. One of the problems, though, Colby, is that sometimes, especially with smaller suppliers, I may be using Walmart's system. How do I have transparency? How do I know what's going on within the system? Maybe a forklift operator, a Walmart forklift drops part of my pallet. How do I know that as a supplier?
So Walmart has established a OTIF page within Retail Link. So if you go to RetailLink/documents and then go to OTIF, there's an entire section in there on suppliers and the management of OTIF. One of the things that Walmart has developed for OTIF is a scorecard. And within the scorecard is very specific of how a supplier can manage their business, but it actually shows what the supplier is responsible for and what Walmart's responsible for and whose fault. And unlike supply chain reliability or anything in the past, Walmart is actually taking blame, and for the things that Walmart is responsible for, you're not held accountable from a penalty perspective. So it's kind of a new twist that hasn't been in play before, where Walmart is actually spelling out, we were responsible for this. These cases are out, and therefore you may be below the minimum, right, but Walmart's accountable for this, so then you're okay. Then you're not. So that scorecard and Retail Link really will tell the supplier and give the supplier insight of how to manage their business. They made it available since February. I mean, the scorecard and all this information has been available since February. For the supplier, the interesting thing is how many suppliers
taken advantage of it.
Haven't taken advantage
right.
of it and still are just now trying to figure out that I'm getting ready to get fined. And
well, and we're assuming all suppliers have been on. You know, we just had open call earlier. There's going to be new suppliers that are coming on.
Absolutely.
May just have gotten the system a couple months ago.
Correct.
They've got to bone up quickly, right?
Absolutely.
Colby, tell me about, that's just one example. Tell me about some other gaps that may be in the supply chain that K-Stack sees, for example, whether it's using a third-party provider or using CenterPoint, which is Walmart's system.
Well, one of the biggest challenges is for somebody that's shipping LTL, less than truckload, to Walmart. The reason I say that is the way that an LTL carrier delivers to Walmart, they do not schedule the delivery appointment until it arrives at the delivering terminal.
Oh, okay.
So if it's been in transit for 4 days or 5 days or whatever the length of time is, and it gets to the delivering terminal, and the PO due date's tomorrow, and they go to schedule an appointment, and it's not available because everybody's, with a single day, everybody's, you know, basically fighting for appointment time, then there's no way possible for that freight to be delivered on time. And that's probably the biggest challenge that a lot of the smaller to mid-sized suppliers that aren't full truckload suppliers are going to face, is those that are delivering LTL. Just the method in which an LTL carrier operates, it's not set up to comply with a one-day window.
That's Colby Beeland and Michael Tilley talking OTIF. You can catch their entire interview, as well as some additional perspective from Business Journal reporter Kim Souza, in a video on our sister website at talkbusiness.net. When we come back, we'll talk Tyson Foods and philanthropy. What does 7 million pounds of food look like? I'll have some details after this.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom, providing voice and data solutions that adapt to today's demand with tomorrow's technology. Communication tools that integrate mobility with the desktop and merge wired networks with the wireless technology. More at one-comm.com or 479-715-8800.
Finally today, a milestone of generosity at Tyson Foods. The Springdale-based meat giant has partnered with the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank for nearly 30 years to combat hunger in the region. The organizations recognized a significant milestone last week. Tyson Foods has now donated 7 million pounds of protein to the food bank. It reached that milestone in the past 9 months by donating 1.3 million pounds of products worth nearly $2 million. Mike Williams, the food bank's director of development, offered this perspective on the size. He said 7 million pounds is equal to more than 200 tractor trailer loads of protein. The Northwest Arkansas Food Bank distributes more than 11.5 million pounds of food every year to citizens in Benton, Washington, Carroll, and Madison counties. And that's going to do it for today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Be sure and keep up with our coverage of regional business news each and every day at nwabusinessjournal.com. I'm Paul Gatlin. Thanks for listening.
The collegiate sports seasons are almost upon us. In fact, the University of Arkansas soccer team is already finished with its lone exhibition match. The Razorbacks defeated Omaha 3-0 last week in a tune-up for the real season that begins Friday at Southern Methodist University. The home opener for the Razorbacks, August 25th, against Penn State. The John Brown University's women's soccer team is picked to win the Sooner Athletic Conference title in the coaches' preseason poll. Last year, JBU won both the regular season championship and the conference tournament. The JBU season opens August 25th in Siloam Springs. The World Championships of Track and Field ended this weekend in London with former Razorback athletes taking one gold and one silver medal. Omar McLeod took the gold in the 110-meter high hurdles, representing his native Jamaica, and Jerrion Lawson took silver for the United States in the long jump. Since 1983, former Razorbacks have collected 16 medals at the World Championships, including six golds. Another former Razorback, basketball player Moses Kingsley, will play professionally for a team in Belgium. Kingsley signed with the Antwerp Giants this weekend and is slated to be the team's starting center. He ended his career at Arkansas, ranked 25th on the school's all-time scoring list. Two members of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith baseball team continue playing in the American Legion World Series today. Dylan Hurt and Logan Allen, both sophomores for UAFS next year, are playing for the Bryant, Arkansas team that has made it to the tournament semifinals in Shelby, North Carolina. The Arkansas team faces a team from Nevada today for the right to play in tomorrow's championship game. The game will be seen live on ESPNU.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. My name's Pete Hartman. Alongside Melissa Jones in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio, Melissa with the Photographic Society of Northwest Arkansas. Thanks for coming up.
Thank you. I'm sure everybody probably knows that we're going to have a total solar eclipse.
What?
On August 21st. And it is going to be about 90% here, so it's going to be fantastic, okay. But it's going to be a total eclipse in central Missouri. So we have a group that is going to drive up to central Missouri.
Y'all are making the trip, huh?
We are. We're going to Marshall, Missouri, and we have picked out a location. It's on a college campus. It's kind of slightly out of town, so there's lots of space around, and we are going to photograph these total solar eclipse. There is a link on our website where you can go and register. It's $20 for the parking, so it's $20 per car. But, you know, once you get there, you're guaranteed a spot. And that's really important, and it's important to register for this right away because these spots are filling up so fast. The hotels are almost gone. So lodging is very difficult to find now. So if you're going to do something like this, you really have to do it very quickly.
What must we know before we point a camera at the sun?
Most important thing that you need to know is you should never, ever, ever try to take a photograph without a solar filter.
Okay.
Because you will destroy your camera, you will destroy your cell phone, you will destroy your lens. It's going to completely ruin it because it will melt the sensor, essentially. So you must have a solar filter. You can go to Amazon.com and they have all kinds of filter paper and actual filters that you can purchase. You also need to get some filter glasses because you should not look at a solar eclipse. You will also burn your retinas out, and that's generally a bad thing. So you must have that filter in order to take photos of the eclipse.
I will say I can't wait for the morning of the 22nd to see everybody, because you know that there's going to be tons of pictures of this.
Absolutely. There's going to be photos everywhere. And I've heard people say, you know, well, I want to make sure that I get a nice foreground in with it. The problem is going to be, this is taking place mid-afternoon, so the sun's going to be essentially overhead.
Gotcha.
So really, if you're wanting to go out and shoot it, if you can get some kind of foreground, that would be great. But if you can't, don't worry about it. You know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Just get out and enjoy it.
Enjoy it. That's something to also remember, you know. Don't get so wrapped up that it's all over and you're like, wait, did I kind of missed it? Okay, we've been speaking with Melissa Jones with the Photographic Society of Northwest Arkansas.
And if you want more information on this, you can visit our website, which is www.psnwa.org.
Awesome. Melissa, thanks for talking to us again.
Well, thank you very much.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. Texas Tyler of Mena was a seminal country and western star, as well as an early casualty of the emerging industry's excesses. He was born David Luke Myrick on June 20, 1916, in Polk County, Arkansas, to parents James and Ida Bell. He was the youngest of three brothers. The family was poor. David didn't finish grade school, but by the time he was a young teen, he was performing at area dances and talent shows. As a young teenager, T-Texas Tyler also appeared on radio talent shows and later worked as a disc jockey. Although slim and small, Tyler had a big voice, which he punctuated with his trademark trilled vocal growl on emphasized lyrics. He had used the stage name Ozark Mountain Dave, but by the mid-1930s, he began using Texas Tyler and eventually settled on T-Texas Tyler after being introduced that way by a radio announcer. T-Texas Tyler served a stint in the Army in the waning days of World War II and landed in California. There, he signed with Four Star Records as the label's first country artist. He found success, hitting with such songs as Filipino Baby, Heard Here, and Oklahoma Hills. Soon, other country performers, such as the Maddox Brothers and Rose, Webb Pierce, and the Armstrong Twins from DeWitt in Arkansas County, were on Four Star Records. Tyler and the Armstrongs were among the handful of the label's artists who had their own radio programs on powerful Mexican border radio stations. All would appear as special guests on one another's shows. Tyler, at one point, hosted his own television program in Los Angeles called The Range Roundup. Additionally, he starred in the 1949 movies Horsemen of the Sierra and The Durango Kid, and in 1950s, Twilight in the Sierras with Roy Rogers. The star of T-Texas Tyler rose through the late 1940s and early 1950s. Hits kept coming, like Remember Me, Dad Gave My Dog Away, In My Little Red Book, Heard Here, and his cover of My Bucket's Got a Hole in It.
In my little red book, I see somehow all the girls that I knew, and I'm wondering who can be kissing them now.
And along the way, Tyler acquired the nickname of The Man with a Million Friends. His 1948 hit, Deck of Cards, was huge and had much older origins. The song also helped spawn country music's spoken story song, adopted by Red Sovine and many others. In addition to his movie, television, and concert appearances, Tyler appeared on the Louisiana Hayride and Grand Ole Opry radio programs. But a bust for marijuana possession in the notoriously harsh state of Texas slowed T-Texas Tyler's career considerably. By the late 1950s, echoing the religious theme of his song Deck of Cards, Tyler found religion, and he began performing gospel music and even evangelizing. Tyler eventually became an Assembly of God preacher. T-Texas Tyler died January 23, 1972, in Springfield, Missouri, at age 56 of cancer. He paved the way for country performers behind him, and he remains oft imitated. But Tyler, the man with a million friends, and who signed his publicity photographs, Remember Me, T-Texas Tyler, after the name of his song, is not so well remembered. Ironically, one of Tyler's most tangible latter-day legacies is Willie Nelson's adoption of Tyler's song, Remember Me. Tyler's Deck of Cards has become an evergreen, recorded by many. Little Rock native Jim Dickinson, best known as a producer and session man, has also recorded and performed T-Texas Tyler songs. El Dorado-born writer Charles Portis also remembers T-Texas Tyler in his 1979 novel, Dog of the South. After calling him a tremendous entertainer, a character says, "Don't ask me what happened to Tyler, because I don't know. I don't have that information. He may be living in a single-wide trailer somewhere, a forgotten old man. Where are those million friends now? It's a shame how we neglect our poets. It's the shame of the nation." Here in its entirety, it's T-Texas Tyler of Mena with Remember Me.
Remember me when the candle lights are gleaming. Remember me at the close of a long, long day. It would be so sweet when all
belong to lovers in the glow.
now, and we will never be the same except in memory. Remember me when the candle lights are gleaming. Remember me at the close of a long, long day. Sweeter smile and a love more bold and free. But in the end, fair weather friends may break your heart, dear. If they do, sweetheart, remember me. Remember me when the candle lights are gleaming. Remember me at the close of a long, long day.
Polk County native T. Texas Tyler, the man with a million friends with his song, Remember Me. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Executive producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs is underwritten by the Old Statehouse Museum in Little Rock, a museum of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. Arkansongs, since 1998.
The Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society and KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series continues with Six Strings, Six Stories, tracing the lineage of the jazz guitar with the Alex Wentz Trio, Saturday, August 19th at 8 p.m. at the Haxton Road Studio in Bentonville. KUAF.com or digjazz.com for information or tickets. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
On the next Fresh Air, Max Brooks, author of the zombie survival guide World War Z and a new novelization of the video game Minecraft. His books are his way of dealing with fears he grew up with, like the AIDS epidemic, earthquake, and nuclear war. He now works with the military on preparedness training. Max is the son of Mel Brooks and Ann Bancroft. Join us.
Fresh Air, twice every weekday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. It's about 6 minutes before 8 p.m. right now. This is an evening edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Like I did today during the noon show, I'm bringing Antoinette Grajeda into the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to help me end the show. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Very good. Let's talk a little bit about what else is coming up on the show this week. I know you're going to have a story on tomorrow's show that's eclipse-related.
Yes, everybody's talking about this total solar eclipse. NPR's done a bunch of stories on it, and we will do some stories on it as well. This morning, I spoke to a principal, local principal, to see how they're preparing the kiddos to see the eclipse next week. Fingers crossed it's not raining like today.
Yeah, if the eclipse had been today.
I mean, I suppose it would be darker. Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe we should ask somebody.
Yeah.
So I guess if it happens next week, we'll find out.
So let's hope we don't find out.
But a lot of local schools are preparing, you know, they've bought the glasses and they're setting up ways to get the kids out, rearranging some lunch hours so they can, because it's during the middle of the day, so they can go outside and see and kind of make education come to life. You know, instead of reading about an eclipse in your science book, why not go outside and actually experience one? So that'll be a lot of fun. Yesterday or earlier this morning, I also spoke to a gentleman about the Apollo Theater in Springdale on Emma Avenue. It's reopening later this week. And he shared some of his memories working there as a bouncer when it was
Awesome.
When it was first opened. I think he worked there in the 60s. But yeah, you know, bouncer, the guy had, that's what he said. I was the bouncer, and I had, you know, like I'd go in with the flashlight, you know, and kind of make sure people were behaving.
Mm.
So that story will be on Thursday's show.
Also tomorrow, a tour of the Osteopathic College in Fort Smith that has just started its third week ever of classes, and mm-hmm. some of the folks and facilities that they have there. I went there last week.
From what you said, it sounded pretty fancy.
That's a good word.
I mean, it's a lot of technical toys for people to learn on.
State of the art,
mm-hmm.
including some mannequins that students will go in and the mannequins talk.
Do they?
Yes. And they bleed.
Sure.
And things like that. Mm-hmm. And kind of interesting.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear that.
And of course, tomorrow we're also scheduled to have John Brummett with Roby Brock and things like that. And we'll have new shows throughout the week. Then the week after?
The week after is a lot of fun.
Yes.
And we'll be different a little bit. The Roots Festival starts that week. And we discussed it a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to come back and touch base on that. So it's starting a little earlier this year. We at KUAF have been good partners with the festival for several years now. I think we started in 2011, as we were discussing earlier. And so this year, the festival will start next Wednesday with a concert at Crystal Bridges. Mm-hmm. And then Thursday night is the annual kickoff party. And then Friday is our big kickoff party. We will have our live two-hour show at the Fayetteville Public Library just across the street from us here.
That's right. And it's 2 hours of almost non-stop entertainment.
Right. You'll see a lot of the musicians who will be on stage Friday evening on a much smaller, more intimate stage.
Right. Much more intimate.
Much more intimate here. And it's a lot of fun to kind of meet them as they're getting into town. And I think over the years, it seems like a lot of the, I shouldn't say a lot, but some of the musicians have enjoyed that kind of being their introduction to the area. Because you are so close to people. And sometimes, you know, audience members might try and stop and talk to them afterwards or things like that.
And there's something about live radio.
Yes. That makes things a little more, I don't know. There is something about it. It's different somehow.
There's some, what's the word I'm looking for? There is...
Atmosphere?
Atmosphere and just a hint of energy that really goes along with it.
Well, I know for you and I, having the opportunity to host, that is a lot of fun because there are people in the room with us besides us.
Yes. Which,
we're not just talking to ourselves.
Right. We like each other, but...
We do. But it's nice to have other people in the room, too. So we would love for you to be in the room. The doors usually open around 11. I mean, it depends on sound check. But people have been known to get in line much earlier. Mm-hmm. It is a smaller room. It seats a little over 100, I think, ish.
They bring out the extra chairs toward the end, so a little bit more than 100, maybe.
A little bit more than 100. And so it is limited seating. It is free. They will do overflow seating, typically, out in the lobby next door. So they'll leave the door open so you can hear the music, and they'll have a stream of the show playing on the TV that's out there.
That's right. And it will be live on the radio. So if you can't make it, if you can't convince the powers that be in your life that you need to spend a couple, 3 hours with us. Oh, and also the Ice Cream Social. We're almost out of time tonight, but don't forget afterward, Ice Cream Social right here at KUAF.
Yep.
All right. And tomorrow we'll tell you a little bit more about who's going to be on that show. But we want to have some surprises, too.
Surprises are good.
Good surprises are good. A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville.
Siloam Springs.
All right. Antoinette, thanks for coming in.
Thanks.